Poet Speaks. One of South Africa's most anthologized and acclaimed poets, Douglas Livingstone, talks about his life and his writing.
I think I'm blessed or cursed with total recall, and I recollect my very happy childhood in much detail. It was very happy until it was overtaken by events, namely the war. And then I came from Malaya to Singapore as a refugee, and then to Ceylon, Sri Lanka, and then to Durban with my mother and sister when I was 10.
And you wrote a very specific poem from that childhood experience.
Yes, one of the more piercing memories was about a flower. I think they may be quite common in several countries. They just bloom once per annum. This one's called A Flower for the Night. Where I lived for a childhood, the night grass was as magical as the moon, coolly white and soft, like new snow, beautiful, and deeply piled by the monsoons. There was a flower, I never learnt its name, that bloomed one night a year, following with its delicate bluish face the arc that the full moon steered. There was a garden of small temples, a shrine to the wind and other deities, where tea was served to guests in porcelain shells, carried over bridges of red-painted filigree. On the low carved tables scattered about, black pots stood etched with cloud-shaped trees. Each pot held a bud. Each had its silent knot from the waiting throng of, mostly, Chinese. And then the moon rose, fat-faced and yellow. The few lanterns appeared to fade in the silver air. In minutes, as in a spell, all the buds opened. There were so many quiet people there.
How different did you feel to those other children on the South Coast when you first came to this country?
Well, I wasn't conscious of any difference, really. I couldn't make head or tail of this strange language, Afrikaans, which a lot of the kids spoke in a sort of slang. But we were all just grubby small boys together. That was also a good time, South Coast of Natal.
And growing up, going to Kearsney College?
Well, hang on, I went to a couple of government schools first. Perhaps I should confess, both of which asked me to leave.
You didn't oblige, presumably.
Yes, I went from Margate Government School to Port Shepstone Government School, and then luckily my dad came back from prisoner of war camp. At the time, things were getting uncomfortable at Port Shepstone, and he packed me off to boarding school.
What did you do that they asked you to leave?
I don't know. I've never been very good at taking direction, I guess. Also, I used to pin poems up on the school notice board, which weren't too well received by the authorities.
Is this a conflict that you've had as a thread all through your life, running counter to the authorities and accepted norms?
I've looked at this situation. I've come to accept it, but it has been very difficult. I've been not much good either as a follower or a leader. Some people have tried to put me in a leadership role, but I've not been much good at that. I'm a bit better now, I'm more mellow and sort of fairly senior in the scientific establishment and part of a team that's been good for me.
How much pressure, though, have you felt to conform to the way everybody else is around you?
Monica, I work very, very hard to appear normal, to try to conform. It's not easy.
Why should it be such hard work?
I suppose there's an anarchic element in me, I suppose in most creative people. But there's incredible tension between expression and the discipline that art autonomously demands from its, for itself. And I don't know, we're getting a bit metaphysical here and penetrating, so we'll just, we better leave that one, I think.
Well, we'll come back to the metaphysics at a later stage, because some of your poems have a decidedly metaphysical feel to them. But you mentioned an anarchic element to you, and I know that as a young man, you pushed yourself pretty close to the edge with some very physical, some very real experiences, such as life-saving and diving, and I believe you've even donned boxing gloves and rugby shorts.
I guess most young blokes do that sort of thing. I wasn't a particular star at anything, although I did hold a world record for a very short time with scuba gear, self-contained underwater breathing apparatus, but nothing outstanding.
Your diving actually took you underwater for the construction of Kariba Dam.
Yes.
What about reading for us Spinal Column?
The first Sputnik blipped above me, where I worked 12 meters down at the jaws of dam construction in an outraged Zambezi. Hearing the broadcast about it that evening recalled a light cord tied at my back, which strung the man groping in mud to sometime star men knotted under my ancient aqualung.
Does this, do you think, confuse your readers sometimes as to who you are and where you've been? I mean, are poets meant to do all these tough physical things?
Look, I don't think they're tough. One's got a body and one's got a brain, and they are two machines or two parts of a machine together making up one highly complex machine, and I guess one lives to the hilt. The poems come out of that. There's nothing very conscious about it, nothing very separate about it. I love scholarship. I love sometimes... In my scientific work, I have to spend hours in libraries doing sort of paper research. I love that, but I've had very few opportunities for it. My job is physical and cerebral, and I'm very pleased the poems are. I hope nobody is confused. Sometimes, alone at night, lying upon your surf ski, far beyond the shark net, drifting on the salt wet belly of your mistress, the black ocean, cool under a windless, moonless sky, your dangling toes, you hope, not luminous from below, dozing to the sleepy, remote mutter of shore-lusting breakers. You start, hearing the thrash of bone, foam and wake, splintering yardage and thrumming chords, creak, groan and rattle of blocks, and, trembling as you lie, wet from your own death salt, you hear the solitary, hopeless, steady cursing in Dutch.